Ball Spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Thursday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Get into a variety of different topics. The NFL this week, a couple injuries reported yesterday that hit pretty close to home for a lot of us in Oklahoma. Which games is Jared interested in this week on the NFL docket? And a question. What results this week would make you start to change your mind about a team, change your preseason thoughts about a team, I guess I should say. I've got a couple written down. It's early, but would make you kind of start to think, you know what? I might have been wrong about that team, either good or bad. They're not as good as I thought, or, maybe they're better than I thought. We'll talk about that. College football weekend coming up. It's a pretty light schedule. Well, I think there's only two games between teams that are ranked, Bama, Florida, Auburn, and Penn State. You know what that normally means? Upsets. Do you think, this is going to be the old status quo week? Don't worry about this week. Just a couple of good games. Everybody else will skate right by. It'll be fine. Normally, that's when chaos occurs. So who is on upset alert? What are our favorite games outside of those two bigger ones? And then, of course, OSU and Boise. Who wins and why? OU, Nebraska. Who wins, why? And by how much? Maybe the most important question about that one. Brooksy versus Zinger. Ryder Cup coming up. We are next weekend. End of September. Ryder Cup just a week away. They'll be teeing it up right now at Whistling Straits in a week. Brooks Koepka with some interesting comments. And Zinger fired back. And a new name emerged in the USC coaching search yesterday. A very, very interesting name that kind of checks a lot of the boxes. Do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
I can't wait to see your reaction because this checks a lot of the boxes of what kind of I convinced you when we first heard about this, where they would go for a couple reasons, and also local ties, which means helping recruiting, I think. So can't wait to see your reaction. Jared, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I was chuckling over here. I'm doing a little research on some upcoming college games. And by way of ESPN, do you know the last time? This is what ESPN thinks the last time Nebraska beat Oklahoma in football. It's an easy answer.
2009.
Yes. They wrote 1996.
Oops. There's a couple wins in between there.
There's a couple. 01 and 09.
2009, that was Landry Jones' redshirt freshman year after Bradford got hurt. I think five picks in Lincoln.
Yeah, and somehow the fans
never gave him any credit after that.
It was a 10-3 loss. I mean, they're still in it to the very end. It was Ndamukong Suh versus OU.
I think that's at least for me, that was the game. And then obviously the Texas Big 12 title game later on. But that was, because Nebraska being in the North back then, you didn't watch them all the time like you did when you were a kid when you knew you were going to play them every year.
Yeah.
So you kind of missed Sue's start, I guess. And that was when I was like, holy crap, who the heck is Ndamukong Suh?
Yeah, we heard about him going into that game.
Right.
And I thought, okay, yeah, that's nice. They did it against – he was dominating less inferior teams. But you know how it works. When they are challenged by a really good team or a team like – or a program like OU, usually that program comes out on top. But no, Sue was the real deal. He was the real deal. There's a reason why Landry Jones threw those picks, because Sue was always in his face, I think.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, he was everywhere.
Yeah, he was everywhere. The dude was dominant. But shame on ESPN. They can't even fact check that.
Now,
a historic rivalry like this.
Now, 96-97, we're back-to-back beatdowns of epic proportion.
Yeah, I put that in the part of my brain where I file a lot of bad memories, and I don't really access that a lot. I know it was very bad.
73-21 in Norman.
You could probably walk in.
69-7 in Lincoln.
Those were the rough years. Those were the rough years.
Yep, that's exactly the scores I thought they were. I got that on the text. I'm almost positive. Feels like it was Norman first in the John Blake era, and then Nebraska up in Lincoln the second time.
Yeah, it was rough. Those were the rough times.
Yeah, 2001.
Every program goes through them. But that was it. But I just have to roll my eyes when
maybe,
I see little mistakes
wait,
like that.
Maybe
in a national publication.
Maybe what
the
they,
worldwide leader in sports doesn't even know that. Okay.
Maybe what they meant was the last time Nebraska won in Norman.
Let me read it. The
was
paragraph.
1996.
Unbelievably, this is the first meeting between the two since the 2010 Big 12 championship game, which Oklahoma won 23-20. Nebraska last beat the Sooners in 1996.
Yeah, that's wrong. That last time they won in Norman was
1996. Maybe that's what they're alluding to.
Yeah.
But that's one sentence they probably should have included or continue that sentence. The last time Nebraska won in Norman was 1996.
Because they literally beat him three times since then.
Right. Right.
We'll talk about the game coming up here in a little bit.
Okay. Just had to tell you why I'm frustrated.
That was it was the newsman in you just pop right out here on the sports show.
It's the little things. It's like it's like the thing I mentioned earlier this week. It's the little things. It's not hard to go back and proofread your stuff. I'm not perfect. I know. I've made mistakes, and I appreciate people who call me out on it. I want to know. Hey, dude, you misspelled that. Actually, that person's not from Elk City. They're from Sayre or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I go back and fix it. Anywho. People are done with my ranting this week.
Let's talk about Brooksy and Zinger. So Ryder Cup, as I mentioned, coming up next week.
You had to fill me in a little bit.
It's one of the greatest. Yeah. It's one of the coolest sports spectacles there is.
It's very fun.
And it's going to be at Whistling Straits. I think that's going to be a fun golf course for it. Tough, challenging, but you could maybe see them do some stuff on that course that you don't see when, say, the PGA is there because of the team aspect of it. So question was asked to Brooks Koepka. And it goes like this. For virtually all your career, you get to set the schedule and make the rules and be responsible for your own performance. How does that mesh with the Ryder Cup experience? Is it strange being on a team? His answer, it's different. It's hectic. It's a bit odd, if I'm honest. I don't want to say it's a bad week. We're just so individualized and everybody has their routine and a different way of doing things. And now it's like, okay, we have to have a meeting at this time or go do this or go do that. It's the opposite of what happens during a major week. Now, major weeks for him are pretty damn good.
Yeah.
So, okay. And then he talks about it during major weeks. You know, he said, I'm so chill. I play nine holes. I go to the course. Then I just sit around and watch TV, take naps. And he said it took me a while. Some people need it to be turned on. He said, mentally, I need it to be turned off to play the best. So then the follow-up question. But as you said, at a major, you're only concerned about yourself. At the Ryder Cup, that dynamic is different. His answer, it's tough. There are times where I'm like, I won my match. I did my job. What do you want from me? I know how to take responsibility for the shots I hit every week. Now somebody else hit a bad shot and left me in a bad spot, and I know this hole is a loss. That's new, and you have to change the way you think about things. You go from an individual all the time to a team sport 1 week a year. It's so far from my normal routine. Then he talks about going and lifting weights at the President's Cup with Tiger and Dustin Johnson and how he'd normally take a nap, and then he didn't get to take a nap, and there's just no time to decompress during the Ryder Cup week, which I'm sure all of this is totally true.
Right.
And I think these comments from one of the best, if not the best, clutch player over the past 5 or 6 years, at least on the American side, you know, the bigger, that's everyone always says, the bigger the event, the more likely Brooks Koepka's name is going to be at the top of the leaderboard.
Right.
So it's not like he's some sort of guy that can't handle pressure. He obviously can handle that type of pressure. But just in like 5 to 8 sentences, it feels like he has summed up the entire last 2 decades of Ryder Cup struggle from the Americans.
That's true.
For most of the years, the Americans have the better team. Now, there has been some times where Europe has been a favorite, but for most of those years, the Americans were better, and then they'd lose. And you wondered why. And, it, you know, there's always that. I mean, he's basically saying, leave me alone, let me do what I want to do, and I'll do better. in this. But that's not the way it's ever going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I suppose you could, if you're the captain, which this time it would be Stricker, just get everybody away from each other or whatever, let them go do their own thing. But I don't. It's not a possibility with the way that this week is set up, right?
Right.
I mean, they're all right. In the team room. They're all doing this. I mean, it's golf, 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 golf because of the nature of the competition. There's morning matches. There's afternoon matches one day. Same thing the next day. And then, bam, you're into the singles. So I don't really know. This feels like complaining just to complain a little bit on Brooks Koepka's part. And then Zinger fired back yesterday. Paul Azinger, who was the captain of that team that broke the long streak back at Valhalla in, what, 2012? Long ago enough that Anthony Kim was a big part of the team. Anybody remember him?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how long ago it was. Maybe even further back than that. Might have been like 08. But he was the one that kind of unlocked the code for a little bit there for the American Ryder Cup side. You know, and he, of course, this doesn't, and he was a player on the Ryder Cup, loved it, fiery, all that. He almost got in a fight with Seve back in 89 at Kiawa, and they accused each other of cheating, basically. He didn't take too kindly to the comments, and basically he said, doesn't sound like he loves the Ryder Cup. He ought to give his spot up.
Hey, I like that approach, actually. I'm not against that, but got to keep in mind, Brooksy's still a good golfer, you know? If you give up a spot, who's going to take it?
Well, and he qualified. That's another thing. He wasn't a pick. He was an automatic qualifier. Yeah. So that means over the qualification periods, normally the 2 years before, he's played good golf.
Yes, he has.
But
he's played real good golf.
But here's the deal. We've seen a whole bunch of guys. Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson at the top of this list for 20 years now who played good golf all year long and then get the Ryder Cup and they can't win. And I think this is a little bit of an insight into the mentality as to why. Because if you look, they're going to flash up the records, and especially in the foursomes, which is the, I think it's the foursomes, I'm trying to remember, which is the alternate shot portion.
Mm-hmm.
There's one of those two. It's either foursomes or it's the four ball. I can't remember which, but I promise you they'll flash it up and you'll go, oh my gosh. There's one of those two disciplines, and I feel like it's the foursomes because that makes you kind of play more as a team because it's alternate shot and you're deciding who tees off on these holes, who plays whose golf ball, all that kind of stuff, where the Europeans have just dominated.
Right.
And I think you're seeing a little bit of insight into why. Because there's no selflessness on the American team because they're individuals, they're coddled, they're babies a lot of the time. And Brooks Koepka just told you that he's one of them.
Yeah.
Now, kicking him off the team, it's not going to happen, first off. But there's an easy solution to this. If you're Stricker, simple. Brooks, we'll see you Sunday. We don't need your attitude in the team matches. If you're going to complain about a guy hitting a bad shot for you, see you Sunday. You can play one match. It'll be the singles, and we'll move right on along without you. You can decompress all you want to all weekend long.
Plenty of nap time.
Plenty of nap time. Plenty of time to go hit the gym. Just
plenty of Sports Center time.
Yeah, just watch. Hey, I know what you can do. Tune into NBC and watch.
Yeah.
And get ready for your singles match. We don't need you. And then these comments also, I think, moving forward for him, if he wants to play, you know, if it goes a certain way and then he decides, you know what, I really want to play in the Ryder Cup team, he's going to have to qualify because nobody in their right mind would pick him if this is the attitude he's going to have. And it's just like, you know, Patrick Reed, I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth. Poor Patrick Reed,
okay,
who is the epitome of how it ought to go in the Ryder Cup for the Americans, Captain America, just looks, he's like the Ian Poulter for the American side. Doesn't necessarily play great, but all of a sudden it's Ryder Cup time, bam, he's the greatest golfer in the world. He gets a stomach virus and pneumonia and can't play, and you know it's just about to kill him that he can't be there because he was going to be a pick just because he's been so great in these events. he can't play, and spoiled butt Brooks Koepka is whining about having to play. It makes it hard to root for the American team in the Ryder Cup when you hear this crap. Meanwhile, the Europeans are drinking beer, ole, 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 just singing along, having a great time, making every putt they look at, high-fiving. I mean, it's evident. And Brooks Koepka, thank you almost for firing this out there so that we can all see exactly why the Americans have struggled so bad in this event.
So I asked you off air, and I'll bring it to air. What does there need to be? Because it just looks like it's inevitable. They're going to lose this thing. Does there need to be a different approach on forming this team?
They change it all the time.
Right.
This time there was 6 picks. And by the way, I don't think they're going to lose.
Oh, okay.
No. They're favored for sure. They're the better team.
Okay.
I don't know what the form. Sometimes it works. I mean, like Zinger.
Sometimes you just have the better players. It doesn't matter.
It is. And then
their attitudes or whatever it is.
Yeah. And I think, and it's strange because here's the deal. In the President's Cup, which is every other year, you see the Americans dominate the President's Cup. Mm-hmm. I think they've only lost twice in like 25 years, dating back to like 1995. And they dominate it. But here's the difference. They're playing against the quote-unquote internationals, which is everybody outside of Europe. Well, guess what? Those guys don't have that team dynamic either. And so then the more talented team wins. Right?
Yeah.
But the Euros have figured out the formula to where they just all they cast any types of personal grudges. They're able to leave them outside the room, outside the team room, for 3 days or a week of golf. They figured out how to do it. And the Americans have it. And it'll be evident when you watch. I mean, what's the biggest story going in outside of this? Brooks Koepka's in it. You know what it is? Well, him and Bryson can't play together.
Right.
You never hear that on the other side. And if you did, if somebody on the European side said this, which they never would, but if they might not let him come. They really might just kick him off and go, all right, that's fine. We'll get Sergio. Or we'll get Bernard Langer or whoever. We got plenty of guys that want – I think it just comes down to the world of golf. The PGA Tour right now is so spoiled because they make so much money. And unfortunately, it seems like Brooks Koepka looks at this as, you know, before the 99 Ryder Cup, which was the stirring comeback at Brookline that everybody remembers. The storylines going into that week was like David Duval and Tiger and a couple of them talking about needing to get paid, needing an appearance fee to show up to play the Ryder Cup. And that made everybody mad.
Yeah.
Like, come on. And now, if somebody said that now, it would be even more ludicrous because even back then, the Tiger effect monetarily hadn't quite kicked in. Now, if somebody says that, they'll probably, even on American soil, they might get booed. Nobody's going to put up with that. You're making $10 million a year to play golf.
Right.
But for some reason, there's just the mindset of the Europeans is able to get away from that, and the spoiled Americans can't.
Well, again, off air, I kind of mentioned, should it be as far as forming the team, you know, you got your best players. It reminds me of the movie Miracle, where they had a team, they had a list of players that the committee wanted, the American Olympic Committee, I don't know if I'm saying it right, and then Herb Brooks steps in and goes, nah, this is the guys I want. So this is who are, and he saw in them, this was a team. This is a better team than individuals.
Sure.
You see what I'm saying? Like, to get that cohesiveness, that team mentality like the Europeans, like we see out of the Europeans all the time. Instead of singing ole, 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 they're in the backyard grilling up some hot dogs, drinking some American beer, and singing American pie. I mean, you know, something like that. Could that be a way? You know what I mean?
They've tried to. They have tried to change the format so many different times. This time, there were 6 captain's picks. That's it's normally 4.
Right.
Europeans have 3. There was 6. But Brooks Koepka was a qualifier. So you can't keep him off the team.
Right.
I mean, and then, man, I can't even imagine the outcry for guys that want to have that by their name that they played the Ryder Cup but don't really care about playing the Ryder Cup. Later on, it's something on the resume.
Right.
If you said, okay, no automatics, we're picking 12. Like, what's your kind of – that would be what you have to do.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
we're picking the 12 guys. Now, in Steve Stricker's defense going into this week, for the first time that I can remember, maybe since Azinger, he actually put in some thought with regards to the guys he picked from personality standpoint, who fits the course. You know, he mm-hmm. actually – that actually mattered to him,
yeah.
which it hasn't seemed to in the past.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that translates to a better result next weekend. But, yeah, it's just the – I think the mindset is so spoiled and so individualized. As Koepka's saying, I mean, he's telling you – what the problem is. He just doesn't realize he's doing it.
Yeah.
in my opinion. But it's still a fun week, and it's just I'm afraid one of these years, with the way that that they act about it, they're going to turn the crowd against them, and then that's going to be that may not happen. I mean, if it doesn't happen to Bryson this year, it may not be possible.
I mean, you just said
God, don't
poor
you.
Patrick Reed, for crying out loud. You know, it'd be hard to turn because it's still USA versus the world, right?
So, it is.
I mean, it's
or versus
it's,
Europe.
Yeah, I know. It feels like the world, though, when mm-hmm. you talk about Europe. But it's even it's hard to explain. Like a player you didn't like in high school, suddenly they're recruited to one of your favorite college teams. Like, well, I guess I'm going to root for you now. You know, kind of like Brooksy or Pat Reed over
yeah.
here.
Oh, yeah,
like,
you have to root for him this week.
Yeah.
Let's hope he doesn't cheat and embarrass the whole country. But outside of that, yeah. And here's the deal. He plays great because he doesn't make it about himself. He's the biggest team guy.
Yeah.
And all the guys hate him for it.
Yeah.
But he plays good. College football weekend this weekend. Don't forget, still about 36 hours to make your picks. For the Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em Contest, 65 strong as of this morning.
It's crazy.
What a great job by all of our listeners. 65 Absolutely. Strong playing a season-long contest alongside with us, picking games against the spread, 10 games every week. Coach Andy Pepper out ahead so far, 13-7. 2 games ahead of a group of 8, including Possum. Me, only 9 of us with winning records so far through 2 weeks. I have a feeling that
just 2 weeks. Come on,
I have a feeling that number will end up in single digits, maybe even less than 5 by the time it's all said and done.
Yeah,
because it's just it's hard to go. It's hard to win more than you lose against the spread. That's why they have giant casinos in Vegas. But anyhow, thank you to Western Oklahoma Realty, Tyler Harrison, Robbie Allen, and the gang down there. People before property is their motto. They can do whatever you need, and then more importantly, they will do whatever you want because they put the people before the property with anything you – all of your real estate needs. College football this weekend. By the way, did you see the name that has starting to emerge for the USC coaching search?
No, I've seen a ton. What is it now?
Eric Bieniemy.
Yes, I've seen that. I've seen
that
since day one, yeah.
That's an interesting name I just saw yesterday. It checks a lot of the boxes I was talking about. It mm-hmm. seems like the USC and even their successful coaches have had ties or have had coaching gigs in the NFL. It's obviously a pro sports town in LA.
Yeah.
And when it's its best, it's almost operated like a pro sports team. And now with the NIL stuff, it's legal. Reggie Bush could still have his Heisman. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. With a lot of the things yeah. that are allowed now. He's a Southern California native, even though he went to school at Colorado. And he is – I don't know that he's the mastermind behind the Kansas City offense. I believe that's Andy Reid. But, you know, his name gets brought up anytime there's a coaching search in the NFL. His name pops right to the top of the list. So I think that's a really interesting name there, Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah, I've seen that. I like it. I like it. I still think – just having this discussion with some friends today of who could it be – I think what USC needs to do, and I think what they will do, is hire a winner that's not a flashy hire. Does it make sense? And I think that checks those boxes, or is someone like James Franklin.
his name starting to
and
you
I'm
know,
hearing
fickle.
There's rumors of mutual interest.
Yeah, I saw that. Franklin, I read that yesterday.
And from pretty good source.
Well, think about this. In the last, whatever, 20 years, the one that worked was the one that everybody went, huh? Pete Carroll? What the hell are you hiring him for?
Yeah, well, that's where I was going to go with Bill O'Brien.
Yeah. What are you doing that for? He sucked in the NFL. Oh.
Oh.
Look at this.
Right.
Maybe that will work because some of the other flashier ones haven't.
Exactly. I don't think it's going to be a flashy hire. I don't. But the Fickle, I think the top three in no order is Franklin, Fickle, and O'Brien. Although I haven't seen O'Brien's name pop up a lot.
Yeah.
It might wait till the end of the year.
It was initially.
Yeah.
I did read. And
listen, they're not going to make an announcement. There's
oh,
no
we're,
way.
We're months away.
No, yeah. So, but this discussion is going to go on forever. And that's another reason I don't like early in the season firings, especially at major programs, because now this is all we got to hear.
There's actually one way it doesn't last very much longer.
Okay. Waiting for it.
Bob.
Oh, right. Someone who's.
Because he doesn't have a job.
Doesn't have a job.
Yeah.
Coaching job. Yeah.
A coaching job, yeah.
I can see that.
He deflected pretty good in the article I read. It's a lot of the same.
I don't comment.
I'm not the one that brings my name up in these. Da 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 da.
Did you? He was on the podcast with Teddy and who is it? Gabe
Eichert
and Teddy Lehman do a podcast. He was actually on with them, and they asked him about it. He was even more deflective than that.
I mean, he always said that way.
He said, "Listen, that." He made it sound like they don't want me, but they want somebody in the OU camp.
Oh, well, that ain't happening.
There's no way they would hire and there's another reason I kind of go against the Bieniemy pick because zero head coaching experience at a high level.
Yeah, well.
You see what I'm saying? Will USC do that?
I don't, probably not, but you know where it's worked?
Well, it worked at OU.
Right here, every time.
Yeah.
Every single
time.
You're
absolutely right.
It's amazing that people don't look around at that. There's only one place that has four coaches that have won 100 games, and that's going to be five if this one sticks around long enough.
Right.
And none of those guys were a head coach.
Before they got
hired as...
This is a great point.
And guess what? And this was a great conversation yesterday. There's a big article by Bruce Feldman in The Athletic. I don't want to pay for it, so... I'm not, but they surveyed a whole bunch of people in the game about, you know, rank the jobs. What's the best job? What's the best job in college football? And those guys, when I was driving home last night, the guys in the afternoon were talking about, well, here's an easy way to do it. Think about how many coaches have left a school for another college job and where it's never happened. That ought to tell you the best jobs. And it's the usual suspects outside of Alabama where Francione left to go to A&M, which that would never happen right now. But, you know, but that was a weird circumstance. You know, no one's ever left OU. No one's ever left Texas.
It's a great point, too.
You know what I'm saying? Nobody has ever left Notre Dame.
That is should be a measuring stick on what's a good job and what isn't a good job.
It's not. This isn't a. Those aren't stepping stone jobs.
Exactly.
Those are we reach the top of the mountain jobs.
Yeah, they can win here. They can
win there.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
This weekend, pretty light schedule. Two games with top 25 teams. Bama goes to the Swamp, and also Auburn heads to Happy Valley. It's first. How about this? The first road Big Ten game Auburn has played in 90 years. Isn't that shocking?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just incredible when I saw that number. I mean, but it didn't happen once in 90 years. Those are pretty interesting. I have a couple of others that I want to see the results of. Not that this is upset alert stuff or anything like that. I just want to see the results. South Carolina at Georgia. Georgia's a 32-point favorite. And the largest margin of victory ever in that rivalry is 32 points. So if you're out in Vegas.
So go with South Carolina.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. Zeb Nolan, that story is incredible. Coaching and playing quarterback for Shane Beamer.
Does he have the right to make the offensive line run laps if he is
if he gets
hit?
Hit? This would be a good week to have that invoked with that Georgia defense who still hasn't given up a touchdown in two games. Also, And this is just to this is kind of not a measuring stick to win the game, just to see how much they've improved after what Tulane did in Norman. I want to see Tulane and Ole Miss. How much has the Ole Miss defense improved from last year? And if that's the case, and they have, are they more of a serious contender to pull off an upset or to be a factor in the SEC West?
We're on the other side of it, like I mentioned earlier, Tulane, I know it's been two games, but they are, as far as scoring offense,
35 and 69 is what they put up.
So that's like top five or six.
Yeah, I think. Surely Auburn's ahead. They've scored 60 twice so far.
Yeah. Point is, it could help ease some tension of that first game against OU if Tulane goes to Ole Miss and keeps it close or even pulls off an upset. You can see OU fans going, see? Maybe they weren't that bad. But that game right there, I know I said this earlier, that's a game I'm kind of circling just to
just see what the score is at the end.
Because there's the both angles. Like, is Ole Miss for real? Is, you know, can they be really good?
Nope.
And Tulane, are they really that high-powered offense that we saw the last two games?
There's another one. I didn't scroll far enough. Arizona State BYU.
Yeah.
The nightcap Saturday night.
Yeah.
I didn't scroll far enough. That's the third.
Listen, okay, my nightcap's going to be OSU Boise, then I'm done.
Yeah, it's an 8 o'clock start.
Yeah.
So who is on upset alert? It seems like these weeks, the narrative around it's going to be, well, it's a pretty light week. Let's get ready for next week when so-and-so plays this game or whatever.
Sure.
And this always seems to be when upsets happen.
Right.
So who do you have on upset alert?
Virginia Tech. They are at Morgantown taking on an unranked West Virginia team. I could see that not going well for the Fighting Fuentes. So there's number 15 Virginia Tech losing at unranked West Virginia.
Yeah, but West Virginia is actually the favorite, according to Vegas.
Yeah. How are we defining upset?
I would do it by the Vegas line.
But, okay.
Not by human
pulse. You're
going
to tell me I don't have a Vegas line in front of me other than I just have the full-on schedule here. Okay, well, then throw that one out. Let's go with – I mentioned what I think about Tulane. I don't think they'll win. Who's favorite in Penn State Auburn?
Penn State.
Oh.
By almost a touchdown. You clearly haven't made your picks yet in the college pick'em.
I have.
Or forgot what was on
I have, but I just forgot.
I think the easiest one to pick out with the way the two teams have played so far.
Let me go to that, by the way.
Outside of the guy catching the cat is Michigan State to beat Miami.
Yeah.
Michigan State's a 6.5-point underdog, at least on the opening line. Michigan State's been great. Miami's been a little bit suspect. Blown out by Alabama and just barely squeaked by Appalachian State. That one seems to me like one that is out there. What do you think? How much of a chance give Indiana against Cincinnati?
A little bit. What's the spread?
It's like 3.5.
Yeah, and it's at Indiana?
It is at Indiana.
Mm. It's a shame it's at 11. I give them a little bit of a chance, very little. But I think it's close well into the fourth quarter and Cincinnati pulls away. When I say pull away, they punch in a touchdown that not only covers the spread but wins the game.
Gators, any chance?
No. No. Do they have their quarterback? Do they know?
They've got two of them.
Right. Have they decided on one, though?
I think it feels like
it's Mullins versus the fans on this one.
It feels like Richardson is who everybody wants.
Right.
And he wants Jones. Emory Jones has thrown four picks in the first two games.
Ooh, boy, howdy.
But Richardson
does not bode well.
But I don't know if Richardson can throw. I mean, he hits some big ones. He's a runner. He's an athlete. 11 carries, 275 yards, and two touchdowns on the ground. It's a pretty good clip.
It'll be 17-3 after the first quarter, Alabama on top. I think Alabama blows them out.
All right. Mentioned OSU up in Boise. Who wins and why?
I think Boise wins because of ball control. And not because of OSU mistakes. Is that fair to say? I think Boise protects the blue turf and they just ball control and they keep it away from Oklahoma State. We mentioned the offense of Boise State, how good it can be. I think Boise wins because of ball control.
Score?
Somewhere in the nature of 30-21, 30-24, something like that.
We got very similar scores, but I think Oklahoma State's going to win.
Okay.
And I think they're going to win because
the defense
is going to play well.
Okay.
And you mentioned no turnovers. I think this is going to be Spencer Sanders' best game.
Okay.
He's going to take care of the football. He's going to show a little bit of the flash and almost irritate people why he can't, you know, be consistently that guy.
Yeah.
I do think Boise's going to score some points against that OSU defense just because I think Boise's offense is very good. But I do think that Oklahoma State is going to win the game. Yep. And if they win the game, they cover because they're a 4.5-point underdog,
sure,
at least according to our
Pick'em
contest.
And I say that
– I think it's going to be a great game. I got 31-28.
And I say – and that's out of respect for OSU when I say ball control, because they don't want Spencer Sanders to have the ball. They don't want that OSU offense to have the ball, because they could probably think, you know what, they could come alive at any time, and we don't want them to do it here in our home. So I think Boise sits on it and controls the game and wins it, like I said, with their dynamic offense, and they just keep it away from OSU long enough.
And if Spencer Sanders blows it, I'll wear my Charlie Brown uniform in here because he just seems too talented to get the ball yanked away from him for 4 years. He's been on the campus for 4 years.
I know, and that's what's disturbing.
But that's also what makes you think, okay, surely the light's going to come on.
It's going to click on, right, yeah.
All right, down in Norman, Oklahoma, Nebraska, who wins, why, and by how much? Because I don't think either one of us have the cojones to pick the Huskers.
Oh, I think OU wins, but I don't think they cover because I think towards the end of the game, kind of similar to what I said earlier, I think there's a late score from Nebraska. But I think OU wins. I think they shore up a lot of issues that are perceived for them to have. And I actually think they move the ball well. I'm not making a lot of sense, I know. I just don't think it's going to be as close as some people are trying to turn it into to make it an interesting game. I don't feel like it's going to be. But I don't feel like – I think it'll be like a 28-point game at some point. And then Nebraska, like I said, they get one in. And
a backdoor to cover.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And OU just kind of like, all right, well, let's just run the ball, run the clock out, get out of here. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, there's no way I can pick Nebraska to win the game.
I can't. I just can't.
No chance. I've got Oklahoma. I think a big part of Oklahoma winning this game is going to be Perrion Winfrey and the interior of the defensive line. You know, you see against a guy that can run the way that Adrian Martinez can run. Sometimes those guys on the outside really kind of they get too far up the field and they create those running lanes for the quarterback. You know what I'm saying? What cures that is that pressure dead in his face.
Right.
And I think Winfrey, this may be – I mean, listen, I'm not comparing him to this guy, and I'm not saying he's going to have that. But I think this – we were talking about Sue earlier, kind of that coming out – moment, at least for us watching Nebraska way back then when they beat OU on the turf at Memorial Stadium. I think this may be that kind of game for Winfrey. We've seen flashes. I think he's going to have a monster game and being able to create havoc because, you know, any telecast you watch, what's the one thing that they say? Quarterbacks hate pressure in their face.
Sure.
And that's what he can provide right there in the middle of the defensive line for OU.
I think because of that pressure, I think Nick Benito has a great day.
And that's what happened. You know, those guys don't run around the quarterback when the pressure's coming from the face. That makes them step back, and then boom, there you are.
Yeah.
By the way, I did see if Nick Benito didn't have a pressure 57 straight times, he would fall behind. And the Pro Football Focus's pressure category, they love that dude.
They really do.
If they were drafting for a team next year, they would draft him in the top 10.
Yeah.
The analytics that they have love Nick DiBenito. I got OU winning 45-21, just barely covering. Just barely. And I'm not sold.
I guess I'm saying 45-28, something like
that. Yeah, I'm just not sold that's – I don't think there's any way Nebraska wins the game. But I'm just not sure by how many OU wins. I don't think it's going to be a squeaker. I think it's going to be a comfortable win. I think that number is really pretty right on.
I think, oddly enough, those kids, we're 38, 40. I think it's safe to say we can call them kids. I think it's oddly enough that those kids don't know anything about the history of this rivalry. There's no pressure there. They keep hearing about it, like, then you keep asking, they're like, it's just another game. We're going to go out there and we're going to win against this opponent. It doesn't matter who they are. As it was back in the day when it meant so much and there was this anxiety feeling, you know, electric feeling in the stands and everything. You know, it's fun to celebrate the history of this. And it's fun for the fans, but I think as the player, as far as the player is concerned, like, it's just another game and we're the better team.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Because you know I don't, yeah, 100%. Because I don't think like that.
Now, when it's like, oh, you Texas, they're like, it's Texas. We got to beat these guys. But it's like, Nebraska, my granddad told me about this rivalry, but I was never a part of it.
So I was trying to explain this on the way to school today to Wyatt. And he was like, do they play a big game or something? It's like an anniversary. I was like, oh, son. This was the game of the year for years in college football.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Yeah,
what do you call it?
It's BD.
BD.
BD Cup.
The BD Cup. The trash talk is awesome, man.
We're B team. They're D team.
I kind of want to go like as a documentarian with a camera and just get your thought. You know, kind of not like a live broadcast, but just like a something. Go, okay, what are you thinking right here, Aaron? And like, well, I'm thinking they're bad, so I can hit anything right here.
I don't know. What, Wilson's in the woods. Mike Clinton's down the fairway, so don't worry about that.
Wow. Shame on you. You use this platform to talk trash and they can't respond.
Of course we did. Don't forget we'll have Corbin in here Monday if we win.
Oh, that's funny.
It's going to be a blast. So I won't be here tomorrow, Jared.
Yeah, I need
man in the ship solo.
Figure that one out. I've been thinking, who could I get on as a guest? Sometimes you do that and I think, oh, I could get this person. Like, well, I don't want to get that person on without Aaron here.
Oh, feel free.
You know what I mean? I don't want to, you know, big doggy or something and go, man, how come you got that person there?
And
I don't know who could that be, but
do it.
I've thought about using some connections and getting some, it's a reach. I'm not even going to say it on air because people will go, oh, Jared's going to get that guy on the air, but it has to do with OU Nebraska, but we'll see. I don't know.
Be awesome.
Be a great interview if I can get this person. I might effort that today. The thing is, you do it last minute so they can't back out.
That's right. Don't give them time to get a better deal.
Yeah.
NFL this week, yesterday, a couple of huge injuries were announced. DeMarcus Lawrence, defensive line, Cowboys, out 6 to 8 weeks with a broken foot. And then a little bit closer to home, and this one really kind of sucks. Gerald McCoy, we saw him get carted off Monday night.
Yeah.
He's going to be done for the season with a knee, and that likely, probably, maybe – the end for Gerald McCoy, career-wise.
That's a great career.
Yeah, he had a fantastic one. But it's kind of, you know, last year never got to step foot on the field for Dallas. This year, game one, and he goes out with the knee. So
I tell you what, it'd be great to see him back in Norman in some form because he has such an electric personality.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
I don't know if they have room for him on the broadcast, radio broadcast, but maybe they're – part of their TV production. I don't know. He just has a great personality. You know, he has a love for Norman. You see that all the time in OU. We wish him the best.
Couple games. What games are you interested in this week?
I had that pulled up. Let's see here. Of course, you know, there's always the Dallas interest.
Yeah, Dallas Chargers. I mean, we're not even being homers to say that one.
No, that's interesting to me. I think Cleveland will roll. I think Arizona will roll. Now, this, I know they're coming off a loss, and I know it's very critical of Monday night's participants on Monday Night Football. But can that Baltimore defense slow down Kansas City at Baltimore on Sunday night?
Remember last year?
Kind of interesting.
Last year, wasn't that a Monday night game? Like week three? And Kansas City went in there and just ran it right down their throat. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Edwards-Helaire ran for like 170. Mahomes, low output, but made, you know, and Kansas City kind of just eviscerated Baltimore. I'm sure the Ravens remember that.
There are a lot of duds this week.
Yeah.
Tonight, New York Giants and Washington, dud. Cincinnati at Chicago. Nah.
You might see Burrow.
New England at the Jets.
I think New Orleans, Carolina is sneaky good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of see what's real there. I think Buffalo-Miami is big game.
There you go again on Miami.
Big game.
It's big for Buffalo. They don't want to start 0-2.
0-2 in the division.
Yeah, that's big.
San Francisco-Philly. Do we find anything out there?
Is Hurts really that good?
That's okay, so that's the next question. What result from this week would start to make you think, maybe I was wrong about them? That's one I've got written down.
What?
Philly.
Philly?
If Philly can knock off San Francisco, does that mean...
And if Hurts has a good day?
That's right. Does that start to mean that they're a real NFC East contender? Because even though they beat Atlanta last week, nobody thinks they're the best team in the division. Now, you go home...
Atlanta's like the worst team in the league.
That's right. So you go home and you beat San Francisco, and Hurts plays well, all of a sudden, wait a minute, is Philly really a contender in the East? Is Jalen Hurts really a starting quarterback and a decent one at that? I think that's one of the... That's a result that could start to kind of change minds.
What if, and I'll answer your question with this one, Monday night.
I've got that one written down too.
Detroit at Green Bay. What if Detroit goes in there and beats Green Bay or keeps it even close against Green Bay at Lambeau? Do we start to go, man, Green Bay is not very good.
Are they in real trouble? That's what I got written down.
Yeah.
Green Bay, are they in real trouble with a loss? I would think you'd have to start to lean toward yes. If you lose to Detroit at home, the last one I've got, and this is for both teams, and it's a game we've mentioned, and it's that Miami-Buffalo game. If you're Miami, Buffalo didn't lose to New England. Miami beat New England. Sorry.
Correct, by a point.
Yeah. If you're Miami, all of a sudden you're going, 2-0 and 2-0 in the division. With the win in New England, game one, so that return trip, even if it's later on in the season, it's going to be down in the sun and fun of Miami and not in the cold of New England. Now, this game is down in Miami, so they're going to have to return to Buffalo. But two wins within the division, 2-0, and then if you're Buffalo, all of a sudden you're 0-2. That was the main team that was supposed to challenge Kansas City, and now they stumble out of the gate 0-2. Does it start to change your mind on either one of those teams if Miami wins?
On either Miami or Buffalo?
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more Miami.
Me too. I couldn't agree more.
But if it's like a one-point win.
And
like,
I liked Miami.
Here we go. They squeak by New England. And if I say 1 or 3 point win over a Buffalo team at Miami, like, okay. Yeah, they're winning now, but will they win like this later? So, but it will. I will start to lean a little bit more that side of the Dolphins. I know you love them.
Yeah, I like the Dolphins. I think they have
if
Tua can just not suck, I think the Dolphins are pretty good.
It's a big if, man.
Here's a good one on the text line. I almost put this one in there. And it's a tough road game for Tennessee. And I think that's why I didn't, because I don't think they're going to beat Seattle. But Tennessee starts out having to play NFC West teams back-to-back with Arizona and now Seattle. They are in the AFC South, which seems to be, like Dakota's saying, where they could, you know, bounce back and win that division. But they go up there, what would concern me if I'm Tennessee, maybe not losing, but if they go up there and Derrick Henry only runs for 40 yards again, first off, I'll be pissed because he's on my fantasy team. And second off, that would have to be a huge concern for Tennessee if not only starting off 0-2, but you cannot get the alien that is your running back going. Not that they can't bounce back and win that division, because I think they can, just because it's not very good. Nobody believes Houston's any good. They just played worse Jacksonville. Then Indy, they look bad.
They look not good.
Against Seattle. So, but you start to question their ability to win in the playoffs, I would say.
Oh, even if to make the playoffs, but can they win? And if Henry can't get going, I think the big reason why Henry can't get going or didn't the last game is because Tannehill couldn't get him going. And I mean that by Tannehill was average, below average at best. And if you can focus in on him and not have to worry about his downfield throwing ability, then you can focus in on Henry. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and
you have to loosen that up for him.
Well, and here's the problem.
And that was why I held pause on Tennessee. It was because of the one question mark for me was quarterback.
Well, I don't
still is. And I know he's had some success, But I just don't believe he's in that echelon of being one of those top-tier quarterbacks, even second-tier.
Here's the problem for that, for him. I don't think it's his fault.
Yeah.
It's hard to throw it with Chandler Jones on your back every play.
Yeah.
He dropped back 41 times, got sacked 6.
That's not good.
No. And the problem for that is to get him going, to get Henry going, those big guys up front have to be way better than what they were on last Sunday.
Yes.
Chandler Jones is on pace to have 85 sacks after the first game. Turns out that would be a record. All right, everybody, have a great Thursday. I'm gone till Monday. Have a great weekend. We'll be back.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right.